This tour is an invitation to stroll through the streets of Vilanova and find out more about the history forged here since the 10th century, when the Santo Conde, or Holy Count, founded the San Salvador Monastery. The voice accompanying us on our tour is none other than that of the Galician intellectual Francisco Fernández del Riego, who brings to life some of the town's tales, characters and places from his childhood memories. Before we begin our tour, you should remember the following instructions. When the audio starts, do not pause it until the end. Only stop walking when instructed to do so, and, above all, walk slowly but steadily.
My name is Francisco Fernández del Riego. I was born here, in this small town on Lugo's Cantabrian coast in 1913. And, well, it would appear that someone thought I would be a suitable guide for the tour of Vilanova. The arguments in favor of my involvement are none other than my supposed merits. A member of the Seminary of Galician Studies, founder of the Galaxia Publishing House, editor of Grial Magazine, member of the Royal Galician Academy, and also its chairman, the Castelao Medal, the Pedrón de Oro Award. That is, recognitions I believe I gained for the supposed capabilities attributed to me by others. In any case, those who know me also know that my work to promote Galician culture was aimed at serving that very culture rather than taking center stage myself. Having said that, I'm delighted to be your host on this tour of the town where I was born and which, despite seeing me leave, was always the home to which I returned regularly, obligations permitting, although, if the truth be told, they were few and far between. So, before we set off, I would like to ask all of you accompanying me to take a look at the square which serves as our starting point. The square formed a part of the San Salvador Monastery, of which we can see, if we look around, the back of the old abbey, the church and the cenobium. The square is named after César Chavarría Pacio, a priest who was very much involved in recuperating the historical and artistic legacy of the monastery, as thanks to his drive and determination, the Museum of Sacred Art, which I strongly recommend you visit, was created. Let's begin. As I'm going to be your host, I'm taking the liberty of guiding you through the landscapes that marked my childhood and adolescence when I lived in Vilanova. This means that we are going to go back to the first half of the 20th century. Obviously, many things in the town have changed, others not so much, and some not at all. We have to move towards the pavement on this street, the Travesía da Mariña, as it is open to traffic. Over to that tree beside the postbox. When we get there, I would advise you to do a very simple thing. Stop for a second and look carefully up and down the street. This is one of the things that has changed a lot in Vilanova, as when I was a child, it didn't exist. It was opened up in the 1940s because a wider road was needed to allow the ever-increasing traffic to pass through. Now we're going to walk along this pavement, keeping the monastery wall to our left. The first house to exist on this road had a modernist air when it was built. You can see it on the other side of the road, on your right. It is called Casa de Soya, because it belonged to Sebastián Soya de Ron, a member of the parliament, local councillor, and major during the Second Republic around 1936. I still remember it being built. When it was finished, the ground floor premises were turned into the Blanca Soya tobacconist, the Canelo Café, and a bicycle rental shop. Let's continue, shall we? We must be coming to the corner of the entrance to Conde Santo Square, although locally it has always been known as the Cantón. Are we all here? Let's stop. Before entering the square itself, the houses you can see on the right are well worth taking a look at. They were built in the first three decades of the 20th century. Number four belonged to Joaquín Lozano, who was the town's council secretary, municipal magistrate, and agrarian leader. The house had a vegetable garden at the back and was once used as a dance hall. The next house along was the Cuadradillo wine shop, and the next one belonged to Marcelino de Paquito. I know you don't know who all of those people were, but the houses they built had their own charm. Let's continue on into the canton. If you don't mind, I'm going to continue to call it the canton and not Conde Santo Square. At the far end stands Santa Maria Church. It has a splendid front, don't you think? As does the building on your left, which is the front of the monastery's abbey. We are going to stop again here. The monastery building has three parts: the abbot's house, or abbey, the church, and the cenobium, with two cloisters. The building here in front of you, which was the abbey, is now the town hall. Before that, it used to be the school. When I came here, I used to like to stop just here where we are now.
Hay que ver. Cada día descubro cosas.
Every day I find something new in these stones. I have to be careful because Mrs. Estrella, I don't know why, she doesn't like seeing me here, gapping. Just as well she doesn't see me afterwards in school, looking wide-eyed at the garden the Preferente looks after. And just as well she never catches me running along the corridor in the convent, she or Don Maximino. And now that I think of it, the Valencian or Parrulo either.
The Valencian was the telegraph operator, because the office was inside the building. And Parrulo was the sexton, who also lived there with his family. And the Preferente, as well as being the gardener, was also a local police officer. Those were the days. Now, let's walk towards the church. You can sit down on one of those benches if you like. I was talking to you before about the facade and how beautiful it is. For those of us around here, we like to think that if this facade didn't exist, then the Obradoiro in Santiago would be very different. You see, they're both by the same architect, Fernando de Casas Novoa. And this one is said to have served as a trial for the Obradoiro. As Conqueiro said, Vilanova is one of the most beautiful Compostelas in Galicia. Going back to the name of the square, I'm sure some of you have been asking yourselves who the Conde Santo was. Here it's essential to recall the monastery's founder. Why? Because on the last weekend in August, Vilanova de Lourenzá is the only place in Galicia where festivities are held in honor of a patron saint who, despite the name, is not actually a saint. His figure as a palmero or pilgrim to the Holy Land sits near the top of the facade. I'm sure you'll be able to see it. Osorio Gutiérrez, known as the Conde Santo, was the son of Don Gutiérrez and Dona Aldonza, a cousin of Saint Radegund and related to the kings of Asturias and León, Ramiro I and Ortoño II. And, although not the founder, he was the patron behind the building's construction. Legend has it that the Count went to the Holy Land as a pilgrim, and while he was there saw a marble sepulchre being carved by craftsmen. He bought it and had it thrown into the sea at the port. He went to Jerusalem and had a revelation that the sepulchre had reached Galicia. The Bishop of Mondoñedo found out and sent word for it to be found, but nobody could move it. When the Conde Santo arrived, he went to look for it and was able to move it without any difficulty. When he died, his remains were laid inside. And by the way, the sepulchre has a hole in it, which is said to have been made by the Conde Santo himself when he bought it.
Cuando ninguém me ve, baixo a capela.
The truth is that since the brothers told me that the Conde Santo's bones are in there, in a wooden box inside the tomb, I go every day. The tomb has a hole in it, so I put my finger in and touch the box. But as soon as I touch it, I get really scared and run off as fast as I can without looking back. When I get outside, I think, I'm never going in there again. But the other day, I go back.
Let's move on. We're going to turn to our right here, passing the line of plane trees and heading towards the boulevard. We will continue along the boulevard, leaving the bandstand, which has also changed over the years, on our left, and walk towards the large house that can be seen at the end, bordering the square. When we get there, we'll stop, all right? Just in front of the bandstand, you can see a fountain, called the Frog Fountain, for obvious reasons. I had already grown up when the fountain was built, and the boulevard holds many other memories for me. When we got out of school in the afternoon, our entertainment was playing handball against the church wall. And on Sundays, after 12 o'clock mass, people would go for a stroll along the boulevard or in the canton. Everybody knew everyone else and would chat about this and that. And you always felt like you were being watched. And there it is. That two-story house that covers the entire front of the square is the House of Oya. Let's stop here for a moment. This urban palace was built at the end of the 19th century by a family that came here from Pontenova, the century before, but which was originally from Oya on the south coast of Galicia, from where it gets its name. You can see some curious male figureheads carved on the arc of the facade's main door and on one of the sides as well. Now we are going to continue to our left. The house alongside forms a part of the same property and used to be home to the casino and the principal cinema. The part that housed the cinema has been quite well preserved and remains more or less the same as it was when it was working. As we continue forward, if you look straight ahead, on the left you can see the building that used to be the monastery's cenobium, later becoming the seminary, which you could access by that same door. The coat of arms on the wall belongs to the Conde Santo, two running walls and a sepulchre floating in the water. Now we are at the corner. We'll stop at one of the metal rails on the pavement. For what we are going to see now, it's better to stand by the one farthest to the left. Are we all here? Now look to the right. The wall that runs along the whole street is the enclosure of the Oya estate. At the end, on the corner of the estate, and to show you just how important it was, you can see one of the towers with a conical roof embedded in the wall itself. And hidden by the tower is the oldest house in Vilanova, which has nothing to do with the Oya estate, although it warrants a visit too, merely for archaeological reasons. But I'll leave that up to you, because we have to continue our tour along Muiño do Frade Street. This long road to our left, which we are going to walk along now. So let's go. Here we have to be careful because this road has traffic, so it's advisable to cross over and walk along the pavement in order to stay safe. The wall you can see on the left belongs to the monastery's cenobium. Its current state of disrepair is a result of the historical comings and goings related to the building's ownership. In the 12th century, it belonged to the Order of Saint Benedict. In the 15th century, it came to the Benton Valladolid. In the 19th century, with the confiscations of Mendizábal, the state transferred the temple to the church for worship. In 1910, it was occupied once more by the Benedictine monks, and in 1942, it was transferred to the bishopric of Mondoñedo, which used it as a minor seminary until 1970. Now it lies abandoned. As for me, in the midst of all these changes, I studied with the Benedictine monks in Samos.
Aí dentro hai dous claustros, un máis principal e outro máis pequeno. O claustro principal amosa catro lenzos.
There are two cloisters inside, a main one and a smaller one. The main cloister has four oil paintings from the 17th century, and the ground floor has semicircular arches as well as growing vaults over transverse arches. I don't really know what that means, but I was told to learn it. Sometimes, when I ran off after putting my finger in the hole, instead of going outside, I go there. When I see the well crumbling with weeds growing between the flagstones, I get even more frightened. Maybe I'd end up there because, as it's a magical well, its powers are bewitching.
People will go to the Holy Well during the patron saint's festivities because it was said to cure diseases. And legend would also have it that it knew whether or not a person had sinned. It was easy to find out. If someone threw themselves into the well and sank, then they were a sinner. And if not, then they weren't. That was the science behind it. Now we're going to stop for a moment to look at the back of the monastery. We just need to look to our left. Where the monastery ends is known as the Brothers' Tower, just over there where the cafeteria is. And that playing field, well, that used to be the vegetable garden. The rest of the facade bears witness to the poor state of repair I was talking about. However, and in spite of its current state, I believe that the tower you can see in the middle of the field deserves special attention. Although it's practically in ruins, you can appreciate how big it was. It is thought to have formed a part of the convent's old kitchens. If you think about it in terms of proportion, then you'll understand where the saying "feast like a priest" comes from. Continuing with the religious team, we are now going to visit the Brothers' Mill. We need to walk straight on along the footpath until we reach the bend further ahead. There we have to cross over to the footpath on the left until we reach an opening in the stone wall that you can see up ahead, to the left of the local swimming pool. Are you with me? But before we move on, I'm going to ask you a question. Did you know that people from Vilanova are called bird people? No? Well, then you won't know why either. I'm going to tell you as we walk. Let's go. At the beginning of the 16th century, vassals were obliged to make an offering to the abbot as a sign of submission. The offering was a bird called Rey Charlo or King Charlo. It was put on a thick stick which two local people chosen by the major carried on their shoulders to the abbot's palace.
Father, we offer you this bird, this robin, as a sign of fealty.
And does this bird have another name apart from robin?
It does. They call it Rey Charlo.
Rey Charlo, I take you an imprisoned bird and give you your freedom. I keep two feathers, although I could keep more, so that when you sail across the skies, freely flapping your wings, you know that by my grace do you fly, mine and no one else's.
This happened on every 1st of January, which was when the public offices were designated and people met in the town hall. And this is why people from Vilanova are called bird people. We should now be on the left-hand side of the swimming pool, about to pass through the gap in the wall in front of us, to the right of the refurbished house. Now, before continuing, let's stop for a moment. If we turn around, we can see a high wall which ends where it reaches the street. This wall is the remains of the ancient wall that used to close off the grounds of the monastery. Imagine how huge they were. But let's turn around again and walk on. Passing through the gap in the wall, we're going to continue on a few meters further to where the path turns left. We'll stop again there to see just in front of us, by the river, what used to be the Brothers' Mill, so called because in its day it used to belong to the monastery. It was then transferred into private ownership and was also known as Palacios Mill. When I first read works such as Lengua de Diamantes, El Cántaro Fresco, Raíz Salvaje, or La Rosa de los Vientos, little could I have imagined that the origins of this author, a renowned Uruguayan poetess, who was also the chairwoman of the Uruguayan Writers' Society, a winner of the National Literature Award, a friend of García Lorca and Juan Ramón Jiménez, were to be found in this mill. I'm going to tell you more about it as we walk along the street on our left-hand side. Let's go. We are going to bring to mind a boy called Vicente Fernández, a boy who would recite verses by Rosalía, a boy who one day left this mill behind and sailed to America, a man who reached the city of Melo in Uruguay and who worked as a traveling salesman, who married Valentina Morales, farmed the land and was the city's gardener for many years, a father who later disappeared to form another family, an old man who died in poverty in Montevideo. This emigrant from Vilanova left a legacy to the Eastern Bank in the form of a unique daughter named Juanita Fernández Morales, better known as Juana de Ibarburu, or Juana of America, who immortalized her fine lyrical voice in the fields of universal poetry. And now, having reached the corner, we'll turn left along the edge of this road, not forgetting our Juana. Because although she never managed to travel to Lorenzá, or indeed Galicia, she never forgot her bond with this land. She wrote in a letter to me, "Galicia, like Uruguay, is my homeland. I have God and my father to thank for making me so rich."
Supera para mí cualquier sueño y acercamiento al alma de esa hermosa tierra que quiero desde que empecé a sentir palpitar mis sentimientos, tan niña que me recuerdo sentada sobre las rodillas de mi padre cuando él recitaba enfáticamente ante mi silencio estático y deslumbrado los poemas de Rosalía de Castro.
In 1963, it was decided that the public library should bear the name of the poet who, in her absence, sent a recorded message of appreciation.
Mi amigo el joven Enrique Washington Álvarez lleva mi saludo a los amigos que en Galicia, respondiendo a la generosa iniciativa de don Dionisio Gamayo Fierros, catedrático de letras en la Universidad de Oviedo, para que mi sencillo nombre americano estuviese en el frente de una biblioteca en Villanueva Lorenzana, pueblo de mi padre don Vicente Fernández.
But her appreciation did not end there, as she also sent a poem specially written for the occasion, titled
Morriña. Rosas blancas de la mar que está besando a Galicia y un viento músico que anda por sus valles y sus rías. No sé qué siempre de niebla, no sé qué de sedas ricas, algo que un poco lastima y algo que siempre acaricia. La sueño con dobles sueños de ausente novia y de hija. Si algún día a ti llegara, quiero sentirme, Galicia, recibida por tus gaitas en un crepúsculo lila de violetas y de malvas, de jacintos y glicinas. Tengo tu aire en el pecho como una dicha vecina.
With Juana's voice still echoing in our ears, we come back to the Travesía de Mariña, the same road we passed on our route out of the town. We are going to cross at the zebra crossing just after, because that's the way towards our next destination, the Stone Bridge. We are going to cross it carefully. The bridge was always a symbol of Vilanova, and for a good reason, because that is where the early inhabitants first settled. Probably those who moved down from a settlement on the hill there near the bridge, and known today as O Castro. Are we ready to cross the second zebra crossing? Then we'll have to come to the corner of this junction beside some signposts. A little further along, we can see another zebra crossing, which crosses the road towards the right. We have to cross there and then continue down the alleyway opposite. You can't miss it, because you see the bridge from the end of there too. So let's cross, and watch your step. The construction of the bridge dates back to the late Roman Empire, used by walkers traveling from the coast, inland, or even Asturias. With the appearance of the Way of St. James, pilgrims will stop nearby, creating a settlement known as Villa da Ponte, or Bridgetown. Take care now. We don't need to stop, but on the gentle slope down to the river we can see, on our right, a stone with an inscription which reads 1842. It is St. Michael Fountain, which, along with the two faucets in the Alameda and the Fountain of Grace, made up a chain of important fountains in Vilanova. When we get to the bridge, we'll go halfway across and stop. Once there, we can see on our left, on the hill and behind the Hermida warehouses, the hill fort settlement I mentioned earlier. And on the other side of the river, called Obatán, we can imagine the first houses that were the early origins of the town. The bridge's surrounding area is one of those things that has changed a lot over the years. Even so, I can almost make out the mill that used to be there and, on the riverbank, the vegetable garden.
Marica de Morán's vegetable garden. All the apples, the cherries, the peaches. Stolen fruit is the sweetest. At least, that's how the saying goes. I couldn't know. The smell from the oven is making me hungry. I don't know whether to go to the Freire's bakery to see if they have any leftovers. And if not, maybe I'll get on a bus at one of its stops and go as far as Villapol.
The house that belonged to the Freire family, a pioneer in taking advantage of travelers in need of transportation, is in that group of houses you can see opposite, on the other side of the river. And if we took that road, we would end up in the village of Villapol, which would have been no more than the utopian destination of a child, had it not been for the fact that Villapol had a school where parents paid in kind for their children to attend. It was called Doloriña's School, and was immortalized in a famous painting by Julia Minguillon. But now we are going to retrace our steps and go back to the junction with the signposts. And on the way, I can tell you a little more about her and her painting. Julia Minguillon was the daughter of Don Federico the chemist, and she spent her childhood in Vilanova. Years later, she will travel to Madrid with a scholarship from Lugo Provincial Council to study at San Fernando Fine Arts School, and gained significant recognition as a painter in her time. She is said to have discovered the school while on a walk across this bridge on her way to Villapol back in autumn of 1940, and was very impressed by what she saw. So much so that she decided to begin her painting in the school itself, using the children there as models and paint them in biscuits. She finished it the following year in her studio, and it won her the first medal at the National Fine Arts Exhibition. We must be back at the junction again by now. After crossing the road again, we are going to go left, and after going round the corner, go along the street on the right. This is where Avelino Montero Villegas Street begins. It's Vilanova's main street, and here everyone calls it simply the street. You will see a tile embedded in the wall, which indicates that the street also belongs to the Way of St. James. Let us stop for a moment first. The street's origins are as follows. A road led from the bridge towards the south, bordering the limits of the land that belonged to the monastery, evolving into the street. Vilanova was born here, as were all the other new towns born in the Middle Ages. All the trading took place here too. Let's move on and walk to the end of the street. The first thing we can see on the left is a large house with a small front garden called the House of Don Angel, the American, an emigrant who made his fortune in Cuba. It belongs to the church now and is used as the rectory or parish priest's residence. All of the vehicle traffic used this street and the flow of vehicles was an important part of town life. Back then, the local buses were heavy, spluttering vehicles. Every day, at the same time, the locals would wait for the buses to arrive with travelers, or indeed the mail. And they went up and down this street, which was still unavoidably narrow as there was no means by which to widen it. I still remember the day the first motor car arrived in Vilanova.
Mama, llegó un coche.
Mom, a car has arrived at the Dion Bouton, and it stopped at Amit's house.
Soon afterwards, it became more and more common to see motorcars going up and down the street. I will wait to see them here at the end and try to guess what make they were from a distance.
Un Citroën. Bitches.
A Citroën. See, I told you. The Citroëns are beautiful. Here comes another one. Wow! Look at this one coming. It has to be a Fiat. It's really slow. It was. I could run faster than that.
Quite often, as I strolled down the street, I would stop and talk to some of the neighbors.
Hello, Angel. Are you still delivering the mail?
Angel was also a tailor, and he spent his time between one trade and the other. I would also stop to talk to Abilio, the saddle pack maker.
Arsenio, what about the ball you were going to give me? I want a big one from one of the lorries.
Arsenio was a mechanic and he had a repair shop on the street. When he had to change a bearing, he would also keep me one of the balls. And now, on the right, we are coming to a modern three-story building with small balconies between each of the stories. Can you see it? We are going to stop here for a minute. There used to be a house on this spot where Luis Trigochao, alias Ogardarrios, was killed, along with his partner, Antonia Díaz Pérez. The original house doesn't exist anymore, but it was big enough to have stables at the back and it looked onto a small stream which is now a street. And who was Ogardarrios? He was an anti-Franco guerrilla who was very popular in the town and the whole area. At the start of the war in 1936, he took to the hills and lived there as an outlaw for 12 years, until 25 June 1948, when he was gunned down here. He never really hid himself too much and wasn't afraid of being betrayed. Because if he was able to last in the hills for 12 years, it was thanks to the support and the networks and the people who welcomed him into their homes to hide. He loved going from fiesta to fiesta. That last night, he was coming back from one. Let's continue.
That was a great fiesta in Ove. It just finished a bit early. I would have stayed for another dance, wouldn't you?
You're a good dancer. Do you want to dance here?
Without any music?
I provide the music for whoever I want. Come on, let's dance.
Keep still. Shh. What are you doing? Are you crazy? They're going to hear you. Stop it, Luis.
Come on, dance with me.
Wait.
What's wrong?
Don't you think it's strange?
What?
That there isn't any electricity.
It will have been cut off. It wouldn't be the first time.
I don't know, Luis. Something doesn't feel right.
So what do you want to do? We can go now. It's almost down.
But we should go into the house by the back door.
Okay, if it makes you feel better, we'll go around the back.
Wait, can you smell it?
What now, for God's sake? Can you see? Can you smell? Everything is fine.
We can't go in, Luis. It smells of cigarette smoke.
That's enough, Antonia. Open the door and let's go inside.
¡Alto la Guardia Civil!
¡Vámonos!
¡Alto!
¡Cago una gloria, vas a verte! ¡Agáchate, Antonia!
¡Alto el fuego! ¡Alto! ¡Morado! ¡Para! ¡Para! ¡Morado!
So we have come to the square, and we must stop here. Because if we continued ahead, we would leave the town via the old way of St. James. And if we took the road on the right, called Bispo Villarroel Street, we would come to the Chapel of Grace. And it's not that it isn't worth visiting. Quite opposite, in fact. I would encourage you to go. But now we have to end our tour right here, in Linares Rivas Square. I was born here in this square. And if you don't mind, I would like to finish our walk at the front door of my house. We make as if we're going back towards the monastery. If we look at the houses on the left-hand side of the square, at the end of the arcades, there's a house with a plaque between the last two balconies on the first story, which references the humble event of my birth. That is my house. We will stop there, and after looking at it, which won't take long, turn our backs to it to see what I saw when I looked out of the window. Because what you see today, although it may have changed slightly, is not that different from what it was like when I was a child.
Vou-me asomar ao balcón a ver o que pasa fora.
I'm going to lean out over the balcony and see what's going on. Oh, nobody's home in that house opposite. Everyone gets up really early in Don Maximino's house. Maybe someone will be at home next door. There's Don Jesus, where he always is at the window to the left of the coat of arms, always sitting down, with his elbows resting on the arms of the chair and his head in his hands. And on the bench outside, always the same people sat there, the chemist, Don Federico, the doctor, Don Paco Ron, and Dad. And they talk and talk and talk.
This town had a great spirit, and that's what made people into who they were. I found it interesting to see how the town's inhabitants identified with that very spirit. It felt as if they themselves were part of the stones of the church, the houses, and the town came to have almost a life of its own. It became a living entity. As if it were an old man asleep in the valley, surrounded by hills, like a dog lying in the sun. I would hear the bells and feel as if light and time stood still. A friendly voice from inside of me would say, "Speak with me, Lorenza, and you will see how the green land cradles a vision of pink and white."
Thank you for accompanying us on this tour. Please don't forget to leave your headphones in the place where you collected them. The characters in this audio guide were played in order of appearance by Iván Marcos, Dani Trillo, Patricia de Lorenzo, Borja Fernández, and Arancha Villar. Editing and audio post-production by Jacobe Martínez Antelo, and documentary research for the script by Jesús Ron and Manuel Cortés. This audio guide would not have been possible without the collaboration of Manuel Romand and the support of Rocío López, Manuel Arango, and María José López.